is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Monica Ricks. Nikki Haley's campaigning in Michigan tonight.
I appreciate that.
The GOP presidential hopeful now down three presidential primaries to Donald Trump. But CBS's Robert Costa tells us there are concerns now about both candidates.
There is real worry that as Trump takes over the party and the Republican National Committee, there's no reckoning about how he's handling issues like race and immigration.
Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar rallied support today for President Biden in Michigan, where she slammed Republicans over issues like reproductive rights.
These guys, we thought they were going to bring us back when it comes to women's reproductive choice to the 1950s. They're trying to bring us back to the 1850s.
Michigan's primary is on Tuesday. Congressional leaders are still butting heads over military aid for Israel and Ukraine as Ukraine marks 2 years at war with Russia. Our Charlie Daggett is in Kyiv.
While Congress wrestles over that $60 billion Ukraine funding package, CBS News has learned that the lack of money severely impacts U.S. Army operations on NATO's eastern flank with the country and beyond. Spokesman Colonel Martin O'Donnell says the lack of funding also puts in peril.
Not only exercises that, you know, maintain our readiness, but should the need arise, our ability to stand, you know, side by side with our NATO allies.
Progress in ceasefire talks in Gaza.
I'm Peter King. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu tells CBS's Face the Nation he's somewhat hopeful that continuing talks will mean the release of more Hamas hostages.
I'm not sure the exact duration, but I can tell you that we're all working on it. We want it. I want it. Because we want to liberate the remaining hostages.
Netanyahu says a ceasefire would only delay the inevitable Israeli release in Rafah, a Hamas stronghold. And when that happens, he says, Israel will be weeks away from total victory.
AT&T says it is issuing a $5 credit to customers affected by that massive outage last week. The credit will be automatically applied to their accounts. And heavy rains are now fueling disease out west. Here's CBS's Matt Piper.
Wet West Coast weather fueled by climate change is contributing to the spread of a dangerous disease. California's Department of Health reports heavy rainfall led to a dramatic rise last year in cases of valley fever. That is a fungal disease that thrives in western regions that alternate between extremely wet and extremely dry conditions. The state says cases are being reported in new areas where it is not usually found, as heavy storms like the one seen lately are becoming more widespread.
Valley fever is more common in adults over 60. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Monday on Nightlight, I'm joined by Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison and comedian actor Chip Chinnery. It's Nightlight with Peach Schwab.
United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties invites all women to join us for the 13th annual Power of the Purse, Tuesday, March 12th at Bullseye Golf Club from 5 to 7:30. Power of the Purse is a fundraiser to support early grade literacy hosted by Women United. There will be a purse silent auction, raffles, and great food. All thanks to our diamond sponsors, Alliant Energy, Connexus Cares, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Paul Gross Jewelers, Walker Cranberry, and Williams Plumbing and Heating. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit us at uwswac.org or call 715-421-0390. We hope to see you at Power of the Purse.
Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
I saw the Ramones in that place on their last tour.
Oh, wow.
I was doing the club next door, and we just walked next door after our show.
Did you use the old "We're the Comedians" line? That's a big thing in stand-up. For those of you listening, comics will use that to get in anywhere. Hi, we're the comedians next door.
Yeah, we're the thinking, comics.
Like you're with the FBI or something, but sometimes it works. People are like, oh, that's so cool. Come on
in. Oh, you're comics. Yeah, come on in.
Nightlight with Peach Wabba. Weeknights 8 till 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-20s. Mostly sunny and breezy on your Monday. We'll see a high around 59. For Monday night, partly cloudy, a low of 33. Tuesday, partly sunny, 63. Temperatures crash for Wednesday, mid-20s for highs. Currently 42 degrees.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome Welcome to Director's Cut, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. Seth and James here with you. I know it's been a little while. Thanks for joining us on the show and supporting the show. We wanted to tell you right out the gate how much you mean to us, and we appreciate you. And want to encourage you to, if you're an artist or you know an artist, let us know. We'd love to have them on the show. We've got a handful of open dates we'd love to fill. Let us know. Reach out to Seth or I, james.mailoff@civicmedia.us, seth.habhager@civicmedia.us. We got a fun thing lined up today, Seth. What we're going to do is take some snippets and pieces, some of the really meaty parts from our interviews on Midday Magazine this past week with not only Annie Aiello, who's doing the Always Olivia tribute concert coming up here at this PAC, at this First Save of the Arts, but of course, our own Wisconsin Rapids Community Theaters, the Glass Menagerie. Had a great conversation with you and Beth and Melissa and our Tom, and it was a great time. We wanted to share that with the audience.
It was, and it was kind of fun being on the receiving end of your questions instead of, you know, doing like Director's Cut, we ask people questions. So, really cool, that interview with Annie, who's doing the Olivia Newton-John tribute. I mean, it's not just that she's doing that. It's the whole cancer research angle, yeah, which is, I think, why one of the reasons we wanted to play it. It's a different. It's a little different than what's out there. So we wanted to make sure everyone had a chance to check out that interview. And we want to support Spotlight on the local arts, and the theater is a big part of that. So we want to keep doing that as well.
I'll tell you right now, and we'll tell you during the conversations here, saveofthearts.com is where you can get your tickets for Always Olivia and all the great shows over that the Save of the Arts does. And WRCT.org. WRCTheater.org is the website you want to go to get all tickets and find out more information about Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. And reach out to us, all you artists out there. We're looking forward to hearing from you. On with the show.
We have Sally Kistner in from the Executive Director of the Arts Council. Good to see you, Sally.
Hello.
We have Eric Brittenacher with us from the Performing Arts Center. Always good to see you, Eric.
Thanks. Hi again.
And joining us on the phone, Annie Aiello. Annie is, of course, going to be playing for us here in Wisconsin Rapids very soon as part of Always Olivia. We're going to talk about that and looking forward to it. Annie, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, everybody. How are you?
We're doing good. We're doing really good here, Annie. And thank you again for the time. Annie, I know how busy you are, so I don't want to keep you too long, but I've got questions. I've got a lot to talk to you about. I have been doing my homework. I spent the weekend. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do some research on Annie here and learn a little bit about her. I went down a rabbit hole on your career, Annie, and man, I think me and your agent, we could sell you really well. I'm a big fan. big fan.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you so much. Yeah.
I want to get into what not only this show means to you and the message behind this show and so much of that. Before we do, can we get a little bit of your origin story, Annie? Where are you from and how did you get into music?
Yeah. You know, I grew up in a northwest suburb of Chicago called Arlington Heights, Illinois. But I will say that we have many Badgers in the family, so I'm hoping to appeal to many of the Wisconsinites out there. But so I grew up in a northwest suburb, and when I was 7 years old, my dad and mom brought home an album, Have You Never Been Mellow, of Olivia, and this was in the days where we had the, like, huge furniture piece that had the lift-up, you know, door that you put your vinyl album on. and so I just listened over and over and over again, and for some reason, Olivia's voice captivated me. I listened to all kinds of music. I listened to Gladys Knight, Barry Manilow, the Bee Gees, like all the 70s stuff. And Olivia's voice just captivated me. And I just became a huge fan at seven and just listened to her voice and her music, her country stuff. Remained a fan, you know, through the 80s, even though physical was probably my least favorite era. But then, you know, Grease, of course, and even just some of her more current things, just written from a place of real gratitude and overcoming, you know, what she overcame with cancer, just endeared me to her all these years. And so, you know, people who know me know that I'm a huge Olivia fan, and I ended up becoming a singer part-time most of my life. I have an MBA, you know, had a normal career, you know, lived a normal life. I'm a mom of two children. And yet, you know, I've always remained in the music scene in Chicago and beyond. And you know, in 2017, I saw Olivia at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan, and I had a feeling that was probably the last time I'd ever see her live. I knew that she was sick. She had come out having had cancer for the third time, and, you know, at this point it was metastatic. And she sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and it just really hit me very hard. And I walked out of there thinking to myself, wow, like, her music needs to be heard live for sure. And at some point I would love to do that. And it was just a decision I made in my head walking out of that concert. And I didn't know when or where or how, but here I am. So.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for taking us down through that journey with you. That is really fascinating. For one, I'm curious, do you think that hearing her voice from such a young age added to you sounding so much like her, or do you think that that just is the way that things worked out?
No, absolutely. I mean, she's definitely the greatest vocal influence in my life. I mean, there's one other gal, her name's Christy Knuckles, who's another vocal influence, and I've had others, you know, some R&B people, but Olivia by far is my greatest vocal influence. And you know, I have my own voice. I've released some of my own songs, but you know, I've done some work. Obviously, knowing that I would come out with this tribute, I had no idea. And by the way, the timing of this is so ironic and organic. You know, it's not like I knew that she was going to pass in August of 2022, but I had launched my tribute in March of 2022. And at that point, theaters weren't even open. And we were just doing stuff on YouTube. And anyway, ended up, you know, connecting with an agency. And I've been working a bit on the sound just to be more liltier. I tend to have a heavy chest voice. I can belt when I need to. And I guess growing up Italian, you know, you have to have a bit of a voice in your family.
You do. Yeah.
But anyway, I was working a bit on the liltier, softier, you know, softer, have you never been mellow sort of sounds. But other than that, I mean, just all of her licks and all of her nuances, I knew them when I was, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old.
I should journalistically mention, Annie, that I am not only an Illinois kid, but I am also from it. I'm also Italian. So there's no journalistic integrity with this interview. I am completely biased. Big fan of you already.
Thank you.
One of the things that I noted about your performance in watching some of the work that you've done, and encourage people to go check out alwaysoliviatribute.com, alwaysoliviatribute.com, is you. I feel like I'm getting a taste. I never got to see Olivia Newton-John live, but I feel like I'm getting a taste of that, getting an idea of it. But I also feel like I see you out there a bit. And that's something I don't. I've gotten the chance in this job, thanks to Sally and Eric, to talk to a lot of people and to work with a number of artists. And one of the things that has stood out to me about your work, other than others, is I get to see a little bit of both, I feel like. I get to see a little bit of Olivia, and I get to meet you a little bit, too. That's a heck of a thing to be able to pull off. It feels like something on paper you'd write down, but actually pulling it off in real time is difficult. How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I know is, you know, I'm not good at a lot of things. I'm good at singing, and I'm not good at a lot of things, but to know to put a team of people around you that is excellent in the things that you're not good at is, I think, you know, the way that you can move forward in something. And there's a woman by the name of Lisa McClowry who, if you happen to have a chance to look her up, you absolutely need to get to know her. She does a Cher tribute. She's from Chicago. I knew her as a Chicago musician and vocalist. But she ended up doing a Cher tribute that is absolutely astoundingly amazing. And she knows how to look like Cher, walk like Cher, talk like Cher, all of it. So she becomes Cher. And she coached me a lot and even introduced me to people out in Vegas and introduced me to Olivia Newton-John's very own costume designer when Olivia was in Vegas. And so my costumes are costumed by Sophia Song and Kevin Bennett, who actually, you know, put together Olivia's costumes, which is insane. But so I learned the whole how do I become Olivia in some ways, because my agency said, you know, Annie, you're great, but nobody knows who you are. they know Olivia, and so you need to give them Olivia. And I resound with that. I understand that, and yet I knew that I didn't want to fully, you know, I wanted to give it a pause and say, well, wait a second, I want them to understand the story a little bit. So I want to be able to tell about Olivia, you know, as if I'm telling a story about her, not just being her. Plus, the Australian accent is a little tricky. So what I did was I went into the studio, and I happened to have kind of a crazy side note. My nephew, Jack Aiello, is an amazing impersonator. He was on Jimmy Fallon for it. But so we have this gift in our family, I think, of being able to impersonate a little bit. And I think when you have a good ear, you know how to do that. So I listened to Olivia's audiobook, and I learned a little bit of her nuances of how to speak Australian. I actually even consulted some Aussie friends. And so what I did was I recorded first-person narratives with video as if I were Olivia. And so when you're in the show, when you hear those narratives, it's as if Olivia's speaking. But then I'll come out and sing a song, and then I'll talk as me. So it's me as Annie, a Chicago Northwestern suburban girl, you know, and I'm telling the story from my heart, which is true. And it's all authentic and real. It's like, you know, I named my daughter Sam after the song Sam, you know, and so, I'll give some of those little nuggets throughout the show.
We're speaking with Annie Aiello in part of the Always Olivia show that is coming up on Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock, March 10th, right here in Wisconsin Rapids at the Performing Arts Center. Get your tickets right this second at SaveForTheArts.com. Annie, just a couple of more quick questions. I want to keep you too long. You mentioned early in the interview, just touching on some highlights of Olivia's long, amazing career. I think sometimes with pop artists and stars and people that have been a part of our lives, it feels like our whole lives, I don't know that we normalize it or anything, but we kind of like, well, yes, Olivia Newton-John, great artist, amazing, you know, and one or two things pop up in your head. You just, without even really trying, went down generational stuff where she's, you know, for some generations, she is this, she is the Grease lady, she is the star of Grease. Mm-hmm. Some it's physical, you know, it's such an amazing career that she had. And it not only gives us an opportunity to appreciate that, but also to take it in. But you as the artist doing this and trying to pull that off, what can we expect with this show? How much of Olivia's career do you really cover?
Yeah, we cover 5 decades. Olivia sold over 100 million albums, 100 million records. So she's up there with Cher and some of the greatest. She had 4 Grammys. You know, so she's an incredibly accomplished artist. But what's even more, and if you watch interviews, more current interviews of Olivia, what she'll say is her greatest accomplishment is not only her daughter, Chloe, but the establishment of the ONJ Cancer Wellness and Research Center, which I think separates her from any and many great artists out there, because she was an incredibly benevolent and just beautiful humanitarian. And so when she had cancer, she really became an advocate for cancer wellness and living with cancer in a healthier, holistic way. And also, you know, she gave her name to the ONJ Cancer Wellness Center in Melbourne, but it also provides state-of-the-art research for people. She believed that she would see a cure for cancer in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I lost a father to cancer. My dad died at 73. Many of us have been impacted by this insidious disease. And so I am very, very much very passionate about it. And so what's cool about Always Olivia is that we give a portion of our proceeds. A portion of every ticket goes to benefit ONJ Cancer Wellness.
I want to talk more about that with you in a moment. I'd be remiss if I did not mention that earlier I was asking how long you've done this and curious about that timeline, in part because I seen on your website you're the 2023 Tribute Artist of the Year. And you haven't been doing this that long. It's pretty darn impressive, no. Annie. That's pretty impressive right there. That is really saying something. There's a lot of great tribute artists out there. You are the top in that list. What does that mean to you? How did that feel, you seeing something like that and hearing that news?
You know, I'm incredibly honored, and yet, you know, did not do this for any kind of accolade, honestly. Like, I'm very honored by it, and to be in the listing with some of these amazing people that have been doing this for, you know, a long time is just, I could never have written this story. You're right. I launched this show, believe it or not, in December of 2022, and by the end of the year last year, I was nominated. So, you know, in 1 year we made an incredible amount of headway, but, I'm very proud of the show we've delivered, and it's really, for me, it's out of the passion for the music and for the person of Olivia. It's really just trying to keep her legacy alive and her music alive, because so many people, I mean, what's really cool about Olivia's music is, you know, believe it or not, my 17-year-old and 18-year-old can say, oh, yeah, I know who Olivia Newton-John is because of Grease, you know, and that movie it just continues to touch generations. And yet, you know, my mom knows who she is. So it really is a wide span of generations, which is so beautiful, right? I mean, that's what I'm here to do, is just help her music stay alive, you know?
And not only that, but helping others stay alive. That may sound dramatic, but I believe it in my heart, and I think that it's true. I, like you, and many, many, many people out there have lost loved ones to this horrible disease. And any bit of work being done on bringing attention to it, or raising funds for it, and awareness, we back you and support you and appreciate mm-hmm. very much. I'd like to, as we're wrapping up here, bring in Sally for this last part where we can talk a little bit about the charity. That seems like a great idea, but it doesn't seem like something that would be easy to pull off, to work alongside them as you know, your tribute. Was that something when you reached out to the organization that they were, it worked out well for you guys to work together?
Yeah,
it's a horribly worded question. I apologize, Annie. I'm a little tongue-tied because it's such a it means so much to me. And I know what it means to you. I hear it in your voice. I know what it means to Sally and Eric. But when it comes to working with that organization, did they reach out to you? Did you reach out to them?
I reached out to them, and you know, just because I knew that Olivia had her name to it, and because I was so passionate. I mean, my dad died at exactly the same age Olivia did, and so my heart goes out to Chloe, her daughter, her only daughter, because I just know what kind of loss that is. But you know, what I decided to do is I partnered, always Olivia partnered with a local team in Chicago called Soul 7, and ONJ Cancer has teams not only in Melbourne, Australia, but all over the world. And it ended up that with the proceeds that I was able to raise, plus other team members in Chicago and the group that was generated from our area, we were the third highest fundraiser worldwide for... Wow. Cancer research. We raised close to $30,000, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you translate that to Australian dollars, it actually makes a huge impact. And so, you know, my goal is to be number one, to be the number one fundraising team in the world for ONJ Cancer. And I've spoken with Toddie Goldsmith, which is Olivia's niece, who's out there, locally there in Melbourne, Australia, and is very much the spokesperson of her cancer center now, and her daughter, Chloe. So, you know, we've got their support, and the ONJ Cancer Centers are well aware of what we're doing. I got invited to go this year, but it's right in the middle of tour season, so I can't do it. But anyway.
Maybe next
Sally,
year.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Annie, we greatly appreciate what you're doing and not only bringing your skills to this town and entertaining us and everything, but it's certainly the awareness and what you're doing with that fund. And we're going to talk with Sally a little bit about the local effect that that's going to have and impact it'll make. I kept you longer than we usually do with interviews, but
no,
we had to. You're too amazing, and this cause is too amazing. So thank you so much for the time, Annie. We appreciate you.
I'm my honor, my pleasure.
We'll make sure that you got a great crowd for the show, and we'll see you real soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for the time, Annie. Annie Aiello coming to town with Always Olivia. That show is going to be the Sunday at 2 on March 10th. Be sure to meet us over at the Performing Arts Center for that. Sally, this show is fun. It's special, but it also has an extra tie into it. And we touched on a little of this with Annie.
Yes. So Annie inspired me with her donations to the ONJ Cancer Fund, and I reached out to Aspirus Cancer Center to see if we couldn't do something with the Women's Cancer Patient Fund. So we are donating $3 from every ticket sold to the Women's Cancer Patient Fund.
Oh, that's amazing. It's fantastic. It's great to bring these arts to our community. Culture matters, arts matter, and that's all well and good. But to be able to add this onto it, that's just above and beyond, and a great idea.
And we also have a donation tab on our website. If you can't make it to the show and you want to make a donation, you can go on our website and take care of it that way.
Mm-hmm. Always Olivia, the fantastic show from the 2023 Tribute Artist of the Year. I'm going to keep mentioning that because that's pretty darn cool. Check out Always Olivia with Annie Aiello coming up again Sunday at 2 o'clock on March 10th. Be sure to be there, everybody. It's going to be a great show. Sally was nice enough to give us tickets to give away, so be listening on our morning show for that. We'll be doing so. So, Sally, Eric, I want to get to how sweet it is. But before we do, Eric, is there something that stands out with these next two shows that you're looking forward to seeing, or whether it's as a fan or just as your role in at the Performing Arts Center?
You know, great question. I really think that just keeping all of the details straight with a quick turnaround between these shows is probably most important. And so, you know, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of either James Taylor or Olivia Newton-John, I have to be honest. So I probably have to do a little bit of my homework on the front end. But essentially, you know, we have to just make sure that everything's ready to go. And there's there's events in between, actually, How Sweet It Is and Olivia Newton-John with our musical rehearsal. So there's going to be a lot of things that I'm focused on that have really little to do with enjoying the show and as much as just keeping it all together.
It probably works out. You're not a diehard fan. You're going to be busy. You wouldn't be able to enjoy the shows that much. Would it?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to enjoy it. I really am. I'm going to eat up every minute of it, and so are our student technicians. You know, we have a big job ahead of us in March. To only be followed by, you know, our Wisconsin Rapids Children's Theater. So it March is a huge month. And so when you ask me a question about what am I going to be enjoying, it's probably just going to bed at night.
Right, yeah. Appreciate the work you and that team do, man. Really, really do. Yeah. Really appreciate
Thanks.
It.
Yeah.
And especially being able to help these kids. And who knows the careers they're going to have, whatever field they go in. The things that they learn with you in these situations, it's going to take them a long ways. It's pretty cool what you're doing, man.
Well, you hope so. And, you know, that's the job of an educator is to show our youth a potential path. Yeah. And where that path might lead them, you never know. And it's a spider web. It can take you any number of directions.
Well said.
And they are very connected.
Yeah. Nicely done. Sally, I know you well enough to know you are going to enjoy every aspect of both of these shows.
You better believe it.
I can't imagine. Is there a part about Ozzy Olivia that stands out to you that you're looking forward to seeing or anything? Because it's a heck of a career to cover.
Well, I have to tell you, I've always been a huge Olivia fan. And way back when Physical came out, I was into aerobics. I got my hair cut short like Olivia and wore headbands all the time.
Leg warmers? So, did you have the leg warmers?
Oh, of course.
You got to have the leg warmers.
So I'm just kind of looking forward to it overall.
Awesome. We're looking forward to it. Let's give her a good crowd, everybody. Again, always Olivia, 2 o'clock, March 10th, Sunday, March 10th, over at the Performing Arts Center. Wanted to make sure to take some time to talk about how sweet it is. We've been actually talking a lot about it on our morning show and getting people really ready for this. Steve Leslie sounds amazing. If you are a fan of James Taylor, you're going to be a big fan of Mr. Leslie as well. He's a heck of an artist. Another great one coming to town and covering another great artist, Sally.
Absolutely. And Steve Leslie is a Grammy Award-winning songwriter, so we're bringing him in for a songwriting workshop that morning at 10 o'clock. So if there are any students out there, homeschooled, whatever, get in touch with the Arts Council and we'll bring you in. He's going to write a song right there. He's going to ask for ideas. Kids will throw out ideas and he'll write a song.
That's such a cool idea and such a great experience for these kids. I can't imagine how great that's going to be for them. Yeah. It is going to be a sweet experience. I had to do it. I had to. It's going to be sweet. How sweet it is. We be sure to check out Steve Leslie and all these great shows at the Performing Arts Center all season long. Nothing but great shows over there. Mr. Leslie is coming to town March 7th. Get your tickets and find him more at saveofthearts.com. Sally, let's go over the details of both shows as we're wrapping up here.
You bet. Both shows actually cost $44 for the adult tickets. Student tickets are always $10. Let's see. How Sweet It is 7:30 p.m. Thursday, March 7th. Show sponsors are Hartle Monuments and Herman Taylor Funeral Home, and Mead Witter Foundation sponsors the outreach. And then Always Olivia, we're doing a Sunday afternoon show, March 10th, the same weekend. 2 p.m.
Yeah.
Be
sure
there.
To get your tickets and find out more at saveofthearts.com, saveofthearts.com, and be listening to our morning show. Sally was nice enough to give us tickets to give away. We'll be doing so on the morning shows. Be listening for that. Eric, get some rest. Hope the next month goes well for you and your team over there, and thank you for the time as always.
Thanks. We'll be just fine.
And Sally, appreciate you as always. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And a big shout out again to Annie Aiello. It was really nice getting to meet her and have her join us. That was a really fun time. Thanks for the connection, Sally. Appreciate you.
You bet.
Again, find out more and get your tickets at saveofthearts.com.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
Civic Media's Rich LoCascio. Could you introduce me as a wrestler right now? You could call me like the Punching Bag or the Patsy or something.
From Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Punching Bag, Pete Schwabba.
Now I'd be looking across the ring at my opponent's eyes getting really wide as he got ready to wail on me.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Now, we tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But right now in front of us is victory over cancer. Right now, cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to better treatments and saving lives. Victory over cancer is there for the taking by you, V because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory. Learn more at v.org.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Peach Waba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcoming in our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater to talk about the winter production of The Glass Menagerie. I'll let you guys go ahead and down the line. Actually, we'll go this way. Down the line, let you all introduce yourselves so the audience can put a voice to the name. You can go ahead and start, Beth.
I am Beth Habhager, and I am one of the co-directors.
Thank you for being here, Beth.
I am Seth Habhager, and I'm the other co-director.
No, Seth.
I'm... Are you done?
No. that was me. That was more me. But...
I'm Melissa Kay, and I am playing Amanda Wingfield.
Thank you, Melissa.
I'm Wesley. I'm playing Tom. Tom Wingfield.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being here, all of you. Appreciate the time and appreciate you guys spending so much time on this production, on the rehearsal time that you put into this, all the effort and energy, taking time out of your personal lives to do this. We greatly appreciate this as a community and as lovers of the arts. We thank you for doing this. What I'd like to do is give a quick synopsis of what The Glass Menagerie is for those that don't know, one of the more famous Tennessee Williams shows, if not his most famous in many ways. So while it may seem like, well, who doesn't know the show? There's plenty of people, I imagine, that may not be familiar with it. So to the directors, if you guys wouldn't mind giving a synopsis.
Okay. I can start. The show was actually his first hit. It was premiered in 1944. Mm. Before that, he'd been trying to get on stage. He'd been writing for pulps. He'd been writing for everything. It was his big break. And for good reason. It's a play, basically. It's very autobiographical in a lot of respects, with the mother and the sister in there. And he tells you that right at the beginning. He says it's a memory play for him. It's a play of what brought him to where he is now, kind of remembering the past and some of his regrets, some of the things he had to experience and that sort of thing. So the plot, is Tom, the main character, remembering a time in his life. He lived in St. Louis with his mother and his sister. And one night he invited a friend of his from the place where he worked to have dinner with them, as his mother called a gentleman caller. She had designs for this gentleman to maybe marry Laura. Who knows what her plans were on that? And it's all about how that goes and why he ends up leaving the family is basically what the main plot of the story is.
Yeah, I would say that it's a story about family dynamics and the relationships and the pressures, because the fifth character that you never see physically on stage is the father that has abandoned the family and the impact that that had on their lives and why things are going the way they are. So it's a wonderful drama about the tensions that we all have with our family.
I hadn't read the script until I was at UCLA, so I'm about 22, 21 or something like that when I first read the script. And it felt very impactful to me, but there was a lot about it that I couldn't necessarily, in the synopsis, I didn't feel like I could relate to. It wasn't until I actually read the show that I felt like, oh, there's a lot of relatability to this for just about anybody from any walk of life. I feel like that's a fun, or it's hard to use the word fun, but it's a cool part of his writing and something that Tennessee Williams, I thought, was very good at. That this show has relatability for almost anybody, no matter where you come from in life. And I think that that's a cool part, and it's going to bring people in. I want to get into a little bit before we talk to the actors and what they have been doing to build these characters and mention the rest of the cast as well. I want to give them a shout out also. I want to start first with where this started. And Seth, I know for you that this was, I don't know if I can call it a passion piece, but there was a little bit of that there for you because you've done this show before.
Mm-hmm. About 14 years ago, I calculated that. I played Tom in a production of The Glass Menagerie.
You should have said four, bro.
I know. I'm totally dating myself.
Young.
No. I'm so old.
You're forever 25. Yeah. You're forever. No.
And it turned out to be one of my favorite roles that I've ever done on stage. And it was a different show. It was like a multimedia show where we had, you know, video and voiceover and some different like stuff in silhouette and that sort of thing. I thought, wow, this is a really cool production. And I had a lot of fun doing it. It was one of the, like I said, one of the great parts I've had. And unfortunately, not a lot of people came to see it. It was kind of disappointing because we're like, wow, we put all this cool stuff on there and then no one came to see it. So when I found that WRCT was doing it for the season, I was like, I want to do that again. I want to try it, and I wanted a whole bunch of people to see it. So I threw my hat in the ring to be a director. They accepted my proposal of what I wanted to do with it, and we just started planning from there. Now, I want to say that the first production was by our good friend Jill Nadeau, and she did it, of course, in a different way than we're doing it, but I took the basic idea from what she did, mm-hmm. and I just – and changes here and there, of course, because – frankly, we have a much bigger stage here than we did at the other place. But the whole idea of it being a dream play, a memory show, it doesn't have to be realistic. Being able to put images up on the screen or on the scrim, as it were, and showing video and filming the actors doing certain scenes and that sort of thing as they're doing voiceover, like monologuing kind of thing. I love the idea of going back in between live on stage and people watching the screen or listening as we do other things on stage. So for me, that kind of adds to the dreamlike quality of the whole show.
There's with something, a visual component going on while there is stage things happening. Is there any worry or risk of people being distracted?
Probably. I would say that. But I think at the same time, when you get into the headspace of the show, because we started off, we have Wes comes out on stage live, and then we immediately go into a film after he does his first bit. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that sets the tone. People realize that it's not just going to be a straight up play. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been advertising as multimedia,
right.
But it'll give them an idea what we're going to be doing. So mm-hmm. I think as they get to that point, then they should just go with what we're doing, and I think that should help.
There were, I wouldn't say difficulties, doesn't feel like the right word, but there were some challenges early on, and it wasn't originally planned to co-direct this for you two. Can you tell me a little bit about that process and how that developed?
Well, when he decided he wanted to direct, I really wanted to be in a production of this at some point. And I said, well, how would you feel? He's like, I don't think for my first one, but I've had directing experience in the past. Mm-hmm. This is his first time ever directing. Yeah. And so he goes, would you be willing to at least help in that way? So I was expecting to kind of assistant direct and just kind of help him through that process. And then when we found out his day job was going to start to get interfering with his evening opportunity, the night of the auditions, I was told I got a promotion.
Nice, nice.
And like, well, you're going to be doing more work than I thought you were, so I'd like to make you a co-director. I said, okay. And so we talked a little bit. I had seen and been a part of the production that he was in. And so I knew the direction he wanted to go with.
Yeah.
But I also understood the play well enough that you move from the exterior to the interior several times and trying to figure out how do we manage that with the space that we're in. Mm-hmm. And so, Seth, I'm like, how about we do this? And we have a set piece that rotates to give you the illusion of being the exterior and the interior. Mm-hmm. And I have to give a shout out to Jim and to Pete, who made what was going on in my head a reality on the stage. They have done a phenomenal job making that happen. And then the scrim itself, how were we going to get that on and off? Mm-hmm. Because we had hoped that there was something that could come from the ceiling, and that wasn't realistic in our space. So we figured out a way to work around that. So it's been fun. It's not something that stays at the theater. There have been conversations at home trying to figure things
out.
Make it work. But I think it's going pretty well.
Mm-hmm. You've touched on a little bit of some of the challenges that have developed from this. You have it on paper, what you want to do, and then trying to bring it to reality mm-hmm. can be a different, difficult transition. Have there been other challenges with this process?
I want to say that for the most part, it's been all technical stuff. Mm-hmm. That's been more of the challenge because, as you're going to find out in just a minute, our cast has been awesome.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They have been the thing I've worried about least mm-hmm. about this show. Everything else is like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? But with these guys, they have just been fabulous, and all four of them. And we'll talk about the other two in a minute. But I'm just doing this to make them just really nervous before they get to talk.
It's a good idea.
So
like
just
director,
very uncomfortable. No, I'm just kidding.
Very, very Stanley Kubrick of you.
Yeah.
Let's talk to the actors a little bit, and thank you both for that synopsis and for that breakdown. Appreciate that, Melissa. I want to start with you, if you don't mind, in part because I have to ask why. Why do this to yourself? I know how busy your schedule. I have an idea, I should say, of how busy your schedule is Monday through Friday. The challenges that you face and the things that you do for not only our station but even as friends and things like that. To do something like this, I'm asking a joking kind of in a joking way, but in all seriousness, I think that the audience, and when we're encouraging people to audition for community theater and be a part of these things, what's one of the biggest holdups? I can never fit the time. I don't have the time for that. There's no way I could fit that in. What made you want to do this show, and how has that gone for you, that transition, that process?
Well, I wanted to do the show because Amanda Wingfield is such a different character than you often are offered a part in a community show, community theater show specifically. Most often people want to see comedies. So you, most of the roles are comedic. Mm-hmm. There are a couple lighthearted moments in the show, and there's a few lines that I think will get laughs, and the way that we're playing it. But Amanda is a very... she's a lot. She's a nag. She's a mother. She cares. She hurts. The dynamic of her character across the arc of the play is so different. She also tries to be the charming young winsome thing that she was when she was, you know, having all her gentleman callers coming. So just to be able to get to experience playing that character was something I wanted to do. As far as fitting it in time wise, I'm trying your method of not sleeping and too much caffeine and couch surfing. So, you know, it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, right. It's true.
No, I am enjoying it, and I managed to you know, fit it all in. It's just you make time for the things that you want to make time for in life. That's basically what we do. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I don't have children also helps. Poor Kevin the cat misses me. I'm not his favorite person anymore.
Oh, well, yeah, that happens.
So there's that. But...
Sorry to hear about that, by the way. Yeah, I was really sorry to hear about that. You mentioned a couple of things about Amanda there, and how it's a different role, not just for you, but in general, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything that you've had to do to get into the character, to research the character, to kind of like, even visually, like as far as appearance goes, to turn into Amanda?
Well, we had to do the filming for the some of the film scenes. One in specific is her when she's younger. Mm. So I actually have a costume that I wore one time the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's currently being transformed into something else, which I haven't seen yet and don't know.
Okay, all right.
but that will be what I'm actually wearing for the show. So the costume was worn for the filming, and then... And I had a different hairstyle, which once our interviews come out on Facebook, you'll get to see that because somebody scheduled that on the same day.
That's all the time we had. How many times do I got to tell? No.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I have the questions about Amanda and the acting that you guys did in just a moment right here. But I want to get to the audience and us to get to know Wes a little bit and talk with him for a moment. And Wesley, thanks again for being here. Appreciate the time. I want to tell you right away, you and I almost met beforehand because I was all gung-ho on auditioning for that role. When I read this play, for the first time I read it, 21, whatever I was, it's been with me ever since. That opening monologue of Tom's is one of the best monologues I've ever read in my life. That alone would make me want to do the show. For you, you read this script. Is that one of the things that made you want to do this? What made you want to play Tom?
Well, I just wanted to audition for a play, really.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah. You know, I live in Wisconsin Rapids, and they were having auditions, so it's okay. Yeah. Audition for a play.
Right on. Have you done theater before? Have you done plays before?
Yeah, so I did one in high school and one in middle school.
Right on.
So,
I never ask this of people, especially another actor, but how old are you? Or ballpark? Or...
28.
Okay, all right, because, yeah, you look 21 to me, man. So yeah. I had to ask. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's not the first time.
I imagine you deal with that. I'm sorry for that. But you know, you have some acting experience, but it's been a while since you've done it.
Yes.
I'm sure that you have seen other audition opportunities or things. Was this just a matter of this just worked out your schedule-wise? Or
pretty
this,
much.
Okay, that's how that played. Yeah. So that's there's nothing wrong with that. There's no wrong answers here.
Yeah.
That's cool and interesting to hear, and I know for a fact that there are going to be people out there that are going to gain some encouragement or some incentive because of hearing you and Melissa, the difficulties or even the opportunities to be able to do this. We're always looking for getting more people like yourself coming down to WRCT and auditioning. I should warn you, you will never leave. you're pretty much family now. You're pretty much going to be going there quite a bit. What are some of the things that you have done to become Tom?
Read the script over and over again, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
I've watched the two movies that were made. And also, for me, myself, I feel like the whole story of the family is very relevant today.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess I try to imagine myself in his position.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's, well, it's just such a relevant play even today. I'm sure there's a lot of younger people, especially my generation, that are going through circumstances of being, mm-hmm. you know, because everyone's on the internet and on the phone all the time. His Laura lives mm-hmm. in a little world of glass animals, so mm-hmm. and I'm sure there's a lot of people who, you know, can relate to that
absolutely.
Of being lonely.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I feel like that's relevant, and mm-hmm. that relevance has definitely helped me imagine the perspective that Tom would have.
Very cool, and I appreciate that breakdown there. That's really interesting to hear, and the tie-ins there. I think that not only is there relatability for people out there, but we love hearing kind of behind the curtain and hearing a little of that. So thank you for sharing that, Wesley. I almost called you Tom. That's how
so
good
convincing.
You are. Yes, so convincing. It's the mustache. It does it right away. It's like, oh, that's Tom. I wanted to talk a little bit, and Wes, I know that you don't have too much experience on stage, maybe, and maybe none recording before doing that. I know Melissa, you have a bit of that as well. There's a difference between acting when you're being recorded and acting when it's one take and you're live and you're on stage and that. Did you enjoy that process, you guys? Did you have fun with that? Did you find it challenging, or did you not notice a difference at all? Did you not approach it any differently at all? Again, there's no wrong answers. I'm just curious. Wesley, I'll start with you.
I mean, it's when we were filming it, when we were filming the scene and recording the voiceovers, I just tried to do my best. Mm-hmm. It definitely takes a bit to get used to hearing your own voice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's kind of weird to me, but that's how it is. I mean, I don't know. I just do my best, I guess.
Doing your thing. Gotcha. Melissa, how about for you? And I know that you have some history with, recording in the video element, not so much as an actor, but more of an, interviewing in that. But you have some experience with those things, too.
I think that part of what made it challenging is that it was so early on in the process, where it was all of a sudden, okay, we're filming this tomorrow. I hope you have your lines down.
right.
Hope you know what you're doing. okay, here we go. But it was... It's cool to be able to incorporate that element into a stage play because, it is not something that you see very often, or I don't know that I've ever seen it,
mm-hmm.
With having both the multimedia and the voiceovers. And but the video elements, I think, are going to be really neat.
Yeah.
It was a little weird seeing myself up on stage on film mm-hmm. while on stage. But, it is what it is. I think the audiences are going to really enjoy it.
I had to. I have to throw in there. Seth showed me a scene the other day. Just it's still in the editing process and everything. There's still some work that needs to be done by it, and it blew me away. Like he was showing it to me for one reason, but I came out of it a whole other reason of enjoying it and loving it. The way it synced up with your voices and it was just like it gave me goosebumps. Like I just thinking about it gives me them again. It's such a cool idea. I'm curious. Especially for you guys that have some experience with WRCT in theater, and your take on this too, Wesley, as being a new member and everything, do you think we'll see more productions, more multimedia productions like this? Do you think that we're going to have more opportunities for this? And because I'm really curious, because everything I've heard from the community right now, there's so much excitement about this. There's a lot more excitement about an old Tennessee Williams show than you normally hear about an old play or something like that. It feels like we're giving them something that just was copywritten in 2023 or something like that. Like, that's the feeling, the vibe that I've gotten from people. Do you think we'll see more of these things? And I'll start on the end here with you guys.
I would hope so. I don't know. It depends on what shows that they choose to produce, because it's not conducive for every show. It worked well for this show and the setting that we have it in, but not all plays are going to be able to lean this way.
One day I'll learn how to do this job. What I was trying to ask there and asking in the play selection process, if you think we'll see even more of this there too, where we're getting into selecting plays and maybe in part because they have a multimedia element.
I would hope so. I mean, we've started tech rehearsal a week early so that we're having 2 weeks of tech rather than one because of all of the extra pieces that we have to make sure we're in place. And, I'm glad that we've had this week to work out some of the timing, some of the kinks, and make sure everybody's on the same page so that when we get to costume and everything next week, we're ready to go. And the people that are in the booth are phenomenal. You know, our Davids that are up there do a great job designing the sound and designing the lights and figuring out a tech glitch that we had from the get-go and finally last night have it resolved.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping because they're getting used to it, there'll be more excitement about the possibility of doing something like this in the future.
Hmm. And I think that especially with some older shows, you know, when Wesley pointed out to me earlier about the relevance of this play, it's something I hadn't even considered, mm-hmm. but he is so right about that. One way to make older shows more relevant is to do stuff like this. I think it's a way to, like, spice it up a little bit, make it a little more interesting, make it, like, so people will be more, oh, yeah, oh, they're doing that show again? Oh, wait, they're doing that? Oh, that sounds interesting. Mm. And kind of that was another kind of angle that I was hoping would work with this is that there would be a little bit more buzz because mm-hmm. you know, most people have heard of Tennessee Williams. They probably know one or two of his more famous plays. But, you know, this would say, well, oh, they're doing that one again. It's been done a million times. Mm-hmm. But has it been done like this? So, mm-hmm. yeah.
I think that it's going to be inspirational to people who may be thinking about directing a show, but also have an interest in videography mm-hmm. or making movies. Because this gives such a, it opens so many doors to possibilities. And possibilities of maybe, you know, incorporating new other shows that you wouldn't think you could do this with. Mm-hmm. But. I don't know. I think it's very inspirational. Well done. Well done.
Let's, she gave me a compliment.
Let's mark that down. Mark that down. You got a compliment. Let's real quick, as we're getting close to wrapping up here, mention the rest of the cast.
Sorry. Now I can't remember. You might have to take this one. Yes, we got. Oh, we got a cheat sheet here. Okay.
Acacia Landowski plays our Laura Wingfield, so she rounds out the family. And then we thank Daniel Bledsoe, who is our gentleman caller, whose name is James O'Connor.
They go by Jim, but he is James O'Connor.
And we certainly want to thank all our tech people, all of our people working behind scenes and stage mm-hmm. to make this happen and make this play such a great production. And want to encourage people to not only get your tickets, but attend more and more of these shows. We don't just mean coming in the audience and seeing them. We want you behind the scenes. We want you a part of the show. We want you on that stage. WRCT is for everybody. We mm-hmm. want everybody to feel welcome and come on down. The show kicks off on March 1st. There is productions on March 1st, 2nd, 7th, 8th, and 9th. All shows are 7 o'clock. March 9th will feature as well as that 7 o'clock show, a 2 o'clock matinee. Get your tickets and find out more at wrctheater.org, wrctheater.org. Thank you all for your time and for hanging out and putting up with me. Appreciate each one of you.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James.
Radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-20s. Mostly sunny and breezy on your Monday. We'll see a high around 59. For Monday night, partly cloudy, a low of 33. Tuesday, partly sunny, 63. Temperatures crash for Wednesday, mid-20s for highs. Currently, 42 degrees.
Celebrating 75 years.
We got something going here in Madison.
On the ice.
Shoots and scores again.
Against the boards.
He hangs on. Badgers kill off the major.
Between the pipes.
Redirect another fantastic stop.
This is Badger Hockey.
Shoots one, scores. Wow.
It's everything.
For the win, he shoots and scores.
Badger Hockey lives here.
Keep it going, baby.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's a new sheriff in town. Well, sort of. Lola is joining the Wood County Sheriff's Department. Her furry face and four legs will provide support to those behind bars. Here's Sheriff Sean Becker.
It's all connected, addiction, mental health, and the people that are incarcerated, it's a very, very high percentage of them are struggling from either addiction or mental health issues or illnesses or a combination or most likely both.
Our Therapy Animal is going to provide emotional support for people who are in distress. The inmates see her, focus on her. It makes them in a better place.
Lieutenant Susanna Wagner is Lola's partner. The two will be training together, then watch for them across the county. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinaire on Air with Jane Matinaire. Weekdays 10 till noon on locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. We want to hear from you there, too. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us. Locally grown radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to Director's Cut. Seth and James featured here. We just got a couple of minutes left. I thought it'd be fun to kind of wrap up with trigger warnings we'd like to see on some movies. Most movies, most TV shows have a warning that, you know, these scenes will
explicit
take place.
Explicit content.
Yeah, that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Well, let's have some more modern ones here. Let's have some ones that actually really help us. Like, for the movie Elvis, Tom Hanks does this really weird thing with his voice. He probably should have warned people about that one.
I love that idea. Weird accent coming up. Yeah.
What about the TV show Lost? You are about to commit 6 years of your life to a show with a horrible ending.
Ooh. See, now you could. There's a couple of shows that I can think of. Now, again, these are all shows that I never watched. Okay, Lost was one of them. But from what I have heard from the fans,
yes.
I know the ending Soprano was polarizing, but there were people who liked it, people who really didn't like it.
True.
Pretty much consensus, Game of Thrones. Was really bad from what I've heard. So, yeah.
You can reuse this one. You know, you might have to change the years, but you can reuse this one a number of times. This one is just a note from me. And it's not only attached to Marley and Me, but any movie with a dog, the dog dies. Tell people. All right? Like, come on. You know how I feel about spoilers. You know how I am about spoilers. One of my biggest pet peeves in the world. But it is one of the cruelest things there is to make a movie where the dog is made, the movie's about the dog, and we all know. No, we've all read Old Yeller.
I was going to say Old Yeller. It's the blueprint right there, man.
It's a trope. It's low hanging fruit. Quit doing this. Quit doing this to us.
Do you want to destroy your audience? Just kill a dog.
Yeah,
that's all you need to do.
That's it. Like 20 humans could die in that movie.
Who cares?
And we're okay. But the dog dies. Oh my God! How could they? Like, stop doing that, Hollywood. Stop it.
Well, I've heard that the best way to make a villain really bad is have him hurt an animal. And then the audience will turn against them like you wouldn't believe.
They made the whole John Wick franchise basically off of that. Yeah. It works. It works. Like four movies you got out of that one. Now, they have in here in this notes, Jar Jar Binks may enrage you for Star Wars Episode 1. I actually think that the Star Wars movies should all come with a disclaimer. Half of the people are going to like it. Half of them aren't. We know that now.
Split it 50-50 now. You know, it's very much the truth.
Come out of this movie understanding that your Star Wars friends are going to all feel differently about this.
The brilliant thing about Star Wars, though, is that because now it's in the continuity, they still have to pay attention to it.
Yeah, that's true.
How are you going to deal with it? And they have to. I think that's why some Star Wars fans get so upset, is because they know they can't get away from Rise of Skywalker, whatever, which one of them they hated, you know, or the prequels or something. They still have to pay attention to them.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that. And for like the holiday or It's Complicated or any of these movies with a really, really beautiful exteriors and homes and everything, the disclaimer, you will never be able to afford this beautiful home.
Oh, no. No.
And chances are most of us never will be able to.
Imagine the sitcoms, especially in the 90s, where everyone lived in New York. They all had fabulous apartments, and they were like, what, data entry people?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. Or they didn't work at all, apparently.
Yeah, half of them, you never saw them on the job, usually.
No, not at all.
You've seen Homer Simpson on the job more than you have like in any of those TV shows back
then. That's at least more, the cartoon is more realistic than the 90s sitcoms, I'm telling you.
That's going to wrap up the show for us, everybody. But just, again, another quick reminder. We are always open for guests. We're always open for for co-hosts if you want to join us on the show or you have a topic idea. And certainly to you artists out there, calling all artists, we want you on our show. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Seth and I hope to do this show for a long time, but whenever it wraps up, I want to be able to look back and say, wow, we got them all. We got all the artists.
That is ambitious.
Yeah.
But I also want to put it out there for those
of your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Hey everybody, it's Todd Albolt. Noon to 3 on Monday, we'll review the week's news and bring you a little entertainment as well, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.